Hello.
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Jay Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello.
Well, today is May Day, and that means thousands of people plan to take to the streets, hoping to call attention to workers' rights and immigration reform, among other issues.
Yeah, it also means you will see some heavy traffic in and around Seattle. So the Immigrant and Workers' Rights March starts at 2:30, and we've got this map here for you to see at Seattle's Judkins Park through downtown Seattle. And as Todd is warning, anyone working in within this red radius could definitely be impacted.
From the packed Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here is your host, the submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
What is going on here, Commissioner Fire?
Commissioner Fire, calm down, inside.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, the millions dead for a corrupt ideology that promises utopia, the DMZ, things so-called Christians should stop doing, and humanity. Don't touch that dial, just try to hear me out for a while. It's May Day, hooray! Let us gather to celebrate by throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails at other people's property, because clearly, that shopkeeper is nothing more than a bourgeois pig hell-bent on keeping you a serf. We've got issues with people who push religion. Yes, you have a First Amendment right to practice your faith. No, you do not have a First Amendment right to literally scare the hell out of people. Here's how you get a hold of me. 565-DAVE, 209-565-3283 is the text machine. Email is dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter. Eloqui conitio. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Which really is applicable today, isn't it? It is May Day. I have no idea. I don't know. I'm about that close to just ditching YouTube entirely. I'm told by the people who are watching it that it looks and sounds fine. According to my control system, it's completely off. It's not working at all. I have no idea. I hate it. I don't like it. They're jerks. And YouTube sucks. But you gotta have it because it's the 21st century and everybody does things on video. So here I am on video. I know it sounds good. Thanks. But I'm telling you, I could put up a picture. It says off air. It says I'm not on. Which makes me wonder now, because now I'm thinking I'm off air, but I'm broadcasting, which makes me wonder when it's off if the CIA isn't watching me. Because, you know, it is International Communism Day. Sorry. International Workers and Immigrants' Rights Day. Whatever the hell you want to call it. So it was, God, I don't remember what year it was. I can tell you what years it had to be. It had to be 84, 85, or 86, but I don't remember specifically which one it was. When the ship goes to sea, we operate on what's called Greenwich Mean Time, GMT. So we leave out of Bangor, Washington, 2.5 miles, 3 miles from here, and it's Pacific Daylight Time. Well, it would be Pacific Daylight Time because it's May. And we close the hatch and we immediately go to Greenwich Mean Time. As soon as the hatch goes click, we go to Greenwich Mean Time, which is, what, 8 hours ahead? Yeah, I guess it's 8 hours ahead, something like that. So CIA says are not watching me yet. So let's say it's noon when we close the hatch. All of a sudden, it's 8 p.m. So you kind of get the way this works. So we operate on what's known as Greenwich Mean Time. And that, of course, that varies with daylight savings time, non-daylight savings time, and then we pull into Hawaii 3 weeks later. We got to go to Hawaii time, so we go from Greenwich Mean Time 11 hours back, 7 hours during DST, whatever. You get the idea. It can get confusing. That's why we use Greenwich Mean Time. That way everybody's on the same thing. And it was midnight. April, I had the midwatch. So I showed up for work at 23:30, April 30th. And at midnight, 0000, there's an announcement on the announcing circuit. Con radio receiving flash traffic. Flash traffic is emergency EAM Operation, which essentially meant that it was a retarget and strike exercise, which meant that I would have to go to work at midnight. Yay. Well, I mean, I'm already on watch, so it's no big deal. A few minutes later, message comes down and they hand it to me. And it's a retarget and strike by TDD, what we call TDD, target designators. And so these are four-letter codes that tell us the target that we need to retarget the missile for and practice doing that. Okay? It's just practice, folks. And we practice on real targets. So we get this four-digit thing, four-letter thing. And I'm looking at it, and I look at the clock, and by now it's, you know, 2 or 3 minutes after midnight. And I'm looking at the message, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm looking at the message, and Danny Egler standing watch with me. He says, what's, and I just start laughing. He said, what's so funny? So, well, somebody at SyncPAC has a real good sense of humor. And I showed him the message, and of course he looks at it, and he didn't know what it is. But it's a retarget and strike by TDD, and the four letter code is CCCP. And I think that's hysterical. In fact, I made a log entry that I appreciated the joke. I got it. I wanted them to know that somebody understood their sense of humor. CCCP is Cyrillic for USSR. Stands for Soyuz Sovietsky Socialistic Republiki. And in our letters, in our English letters, that would be USSR, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And it's midnight on May 1st, which is, of course, International Communism Day or Workers' Day or whatever the hell they call it. It's May Day. This is when we have the big Russian parade, right? Where the tanks come out and the troops and the missiles. And in those days, not so much now, but in those days, you had ancient Soviet leaders who would stand on top of the Kremlin. And somebody behind them would push their arms up so that they could wave. I'm kidding. They didn't really do that, but you got the idea. And it was always an annual event because the people who watched the Politburo, the government of the USSR, would gauge who was in trouble and who wasn't in trouble by who showed up on top of the Kremlin on May Day. And they would roll these tanks and they would roll the missiles and there would be patriotic music and they did this, the Soviet Union did this even during the middle of World War II. May of 1942, May 1st, 1942, they're in a death struggle with the Nazis. Moscow is in grave danger of being overrun. They stop everything to have their parade on May 1st. And they celebrate International Workers' Day, which, of course, started in the United States in the 1880s. As a commemoration of an event that happened in Chicago when police officers went to break up a strike in Chicago and one of the strikers, we don't know who, threw a Molotov cocktail at the police. So the police do what they do, which is shoot back. And of course, eight workers, I'm doing the air quote thing there, were killed. And so this became known as the Haymarket Affair. And this is what May Day, the International Workers' Day, was founded to commemorate. These eight fallen people. Eventually, the communists take over their particular niches, and the idea of the workers, the idea of socialism, the idea that of those things are there. These are things that eventually the communists just take over, and May Day becomes the International Worker Day, becomes the International Day of Communism. It becomes the ideology, it becomes their holiday. They don't have, you know, they don't have a god, so they don't really have religious holidays. So what do you got? Well, you got May Day and you got Victory Day, VE Day, and you got VE Day 2 because of the international dateline. And you have a few other, you know, things thrown in there, but generally speaking, this is the big one. So I haven't been... This has been a very busy morning for me. Normally, I would make the effort to find out, you know, who had a parade and who didn't have a parade. I'm assuming that they had one in Pyongyang. I'm assuming they had one in Beijing. I don't know if they had one in Moscow or not. I just don't know. But you can always Google and watch on YouTube, if it's working, the previous years. I was watching yesterday. I was watching the one from 1980, I think, with what's his name still up there? The old guy. What's his name? Brzezinski? I get them mixed up. You get your Soviet premieres mixed up after a while. They all kind of, for a while there, they were just old guys, and they kept dropping like flies. So you had Andropov, Cherninko, who's the other guy? Can't think of his name now. Anyway, there were a bunch of them in right in a row before Gorbachev finally took over and kind of put an end to all that. But prior to that, then you had, you know, you go back, you had Stalin, then you had Khrushchev, and then you had, what's that guy's name? I can see him in my head, and I can't think of his name now. Jesus, the whole power of the internet right here in front of me, and I can't. Soviet premier. Hang on. Soviet premier. What was this guy's name? Nikita, not Khrushchev. He replaced Khrushchev. What was his name? I cannot believe that I have to waste this time doing this, because I'm... list of leaders. Let's see real quick here. This is going to try. Leonid Brezhnev. I can see him in my head. Oh, Brezhnev. That's the guy. And I can still see him up there on top of that thing, slowly waving his hand. That's right. Not Mika's dad. And yes, I'm told in the chat room that they did have a May Day parade. I didn't watch it this year. I don't know why I'm so fascinated by that parade, but back in my day, you watched it because it was an intelligence gathering exercise. The Soviets would always display their newest weaponry, even if it was experimental on May Day. They would roll it down the streets. And so every recording means that you had back in those days would be rolling, and people's eyes would be bugging out, and they'd be like, oh my God, look what they have now. How are we going to beat that? And it turned into, anyway, Communist Day was, that's what I always called it. International Communist Day is a celebration of, well, communism, socialism, communism. They don't, there tends to be a, you know, because the Union of Socialist Socialist Republics, there tends to be a misunderstanding whether they're socialist, not communist. But Lenin himself said the goal of socialism is communism. It's this idea of this workers' utopia where they get rid of, you know, the means of production, and the people own it, except that it never really works that way. It never really works out the way it's supposed to. Karl Marx said it best. The theory of communism may be summed up in one sentence: abolish all private property. And you can start to see where that's problematic. It certainly would be problematic to Americans, but even Americans who don't understand the differences, but it's certainly problematic to people who do, because that's what we believe in: life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, the property rights. Our entire Constitution is written to protect those rights, many of which are based in the concept of private property. We can defend our property. We can own our property. We can do with our property what we choose. And it's why we get so prickly when our private property rights are impinged upon, even by our government, which allegedly is not socialist or communist. Allegedly, he said, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, somewhat sarcastically. You can see where we would get uptight about that. And you can see where the utopian ideal of no private property, I mean, what was the song by John Lennon? Imagine there's no whatever. I mean, it's basically the communist national anthem. It celebrates that song. While it's a good tune and all, basically celebrates the communistic ideal of utopia, which, by the by, is not achievable. It can't be done. Not that it hasn't been tried. Not that it hasn't been sought after. Not that it hasn't been discussed. Not that it hasn't been written about. But it can't be done. And the reason it can't be done is because of human nature. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. Someone once complained that capitalism is just man exploiting man. That's all it is. Capitalism, just a bunch of men exploiting men. But communism, under communism, he explained, it's just the opposite. Let it rattle around for a moment. It's no different in the nature of humans and behavior is no different under communism than it is under capitalism. Some people are going to try to rule over you. And under communism, which is essentially the political left's totalitarianism, under communism, it just tends to be those who are on the political left, although somehow or another, and I'm not sure how this is, but somehow or another, they tend to get, you know, moved to the right because of the nationalistic element of it. And don't kid yourself, there is a very nationalistic element with regards to communism. Communism plays on nationalism. The Great Patriotic War, the Glorious Red Army, the People's Liberation Army Navy, the people's this, the people's that. It plays on nationalism in the sense of we're this homogenous people as opposed to we're a land. But it's also a place, communism is also a place, socialism is also a place where you hear the land referred to as their fatherland, the motherland, the Rodinia. You don't hear the United States referred to, you don't hear free countries referred to that, but Britain's one of the oldest democracies in the world. You never hear it referred to as the motherland, you hear it referred to as the mother country. But it never really comes across that way. But communism relies on that by disguising it as something else. Mao Zedong is famous for having said, communism is not love. Communism is the hammer which we use to crush the enemy. And this is what communism has done. Throughout the 20th century, communism, by some estimates, responsible for more than 80 million and possibly more than 100 million human deaths. Nazism, totalitarianism, fascism, at its biggest, grandest, grand, most grandiose dream couldn't come up with that. And yet to communism, it's just a statistic. One death is a tragedy. It's a million's a statistic. It's no big deal. It's just a measurement. That's all it is. And whether you're talking about starving Ukrainians to death in the 30s, because they didn't want to collectivize their farms. They wanted to maintain their liberty and you couldn't have that. Or whether you are talking about the purges in the Soviet army, or whether you're talking about the gulags of Siberia, or the millions of Chinese executed because of that, the killing fields of Cambodia, or the re-education camps of Vietnam, or all of the issues in North Korea that we get. Well, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. The concept, I mean, we talk about Islam's disregard for life, but it's really communism that just doesn't care. I mean, if you're not contributing to the leader's comfort, you're not worth anything. And we will kill you. It's really that simple. And how they kill you sends a message. We'll starve you. We'll line you up in front of an anti-aircraft gun. We'll hang you. We'll shoot you and then send your family a bill for the bullets. All of these things to be made examples of, all of these things that, and you look at it, and I know because I get this all the time. Sorry, I'm rubbing my eyes. I'm having a lot of problems with my eyes lately. I get this all the time. Dave, it's communism. We won the Cold War. It's not that big a deal. Why do you care? Why do you worry about it? I don't know. Why do I worry about the Holocaust? Why do I worry about, what is it, a third? Or is it two-thirds? I forget the news story. But why is it that a significant number of our people in the United States of America have no concept what the Holocaust was? And why do I care about that? Because if you don't know anything about it, you tend to dismiss it. And if you dismiss it, well, then it happens again. communism's misdeeds throughout history have been ignored for the most part. I mean, I grew up in a different world, folks. I mean, today the world is what it is. But when I grew up, and I was born in 1963, literally 11 months after the Cuban Missile Crisis, when the world was on the verge of nuclear war, because the Russians, the Soviets were putting missiles in Cuba, and Kennedy was, you know, establishing the Kennedy Doctrine, and it would be the policy of this nation to regard any missile attack on any country in the West as a nuclear attack by Russia, requiring a full retaliatory response. It hadn't been that long before, what, 8-9 years? McCarthy was screaming about how many communists there were in the State Department or the Army Department or whatever. My grandfather was a vehement anti-communist. Vehement. It doesn't even really capture the word. My grandfather would have... there were days when I thought if he saw a communist, he would have murdered them in the street. But, you know, who knows? Because he was also a pacifist. So it's kind of a weird dichotomy. But at any rate, we would have long discussions about how communism, and his problem with communism was that it was anti-Christian more than it was anti-American or anti-liberty. And this was the world that I was raised in. Into the 1970s, where detente began with Nixon. And then you have incidents that I don't find out till many years later. You have the K-129, you've got the Scorpion, you've got all this stuff happening, all these proxy wars going on in Vietnam, Korea, Nicaragua. You've got all this, you've got the stuff in Europe and Czechoslovakia. And I remember one of the leading ministers of our particular denomination had been arrested by the communists in Czechoslovakia in 1968 and tortured by them and treated incredibly poorly. And had finally escaped to the United States. And, it was just yet another lesson that communism was out to kill God and anybody who believed in God. Why do I care? Well, some years ago, and I'm thinking it was 2015, but that can't be right. It had to be earlier than that. It had to be like 2011, 2012. I got invited to speak at a writer's convention, a writer's panel. Now, I know you don't think of me in these terms, but at the time, I was actually a writer. I wrote a column for the Modesto Bee. I worked on some other stuff, and I was actually, not to put too fine a point on, I was a decent writer. I'm not Stephen King or anything like that, but I could get my point across via writing, and I enjoyed it. It was fun, especially the Modesto Bee stuff. That was great. And I got invited to be on this panel of writers who were talking to young people about how to use writing to do something. And I guess I didn't really understand the thrust of the whole thing, because when I get there, and I got there late because I got lost, when I get there, what I quickly discover is this is not your typical conservative panel, okay? There is a guy who writes an anti-nuclear protest newsletter. There's a Stockton Record reporter. There's a guy who writes about, you know, pro-worker rights stuff. I mean, it was pretty clear that you know, there were two of us on that panel that were not outright communistic in our viewpoints. One was very community-oriented, and I still look at that day as a great day because I met my good friend Nate that day, and that was him, and it was me. And so I'm sitting at the end of the panel, and all these people are introducing themselves and what they write about and how they're doing this for, you know, we didn't call it social justice warfare back then, but, you know, how they're writing for change. And it gets to me, and I happen to go right after the guy that wrote the anti-nuclear pamphlet. So I introduced myself as a, you know, nuclear weapons specialist for the Navy, and I write about military things, and I write about humor. And that's what I do. And you could hear a pin drop. I mean, it really was. During the breaks of this meeting, a young lady approached me. She wanted to talk to me about, well, what she wanted to make sure I knew was that she was a communist and communism was going to win, and that at her ripe old age of 17, she was prepared to do whatever it took to make sure that communism wins. And so we had kind of a good-natured discussion. I didn't really feel like getting into arguments that day, but we had kind of a good-natured discussion about, what do you read? And she's telling me about, you know, the Communist Manifesto and these magazines and things that she's read. And I asked her point blank, have you ever read the Federalist Papers? Well, no, I don't need to. Why don't you need to? Well, because these other books have already told me that those things are just lies. Those things are just designed to keep me poor, to keep me down, to keep me out of power. Communism uplifts me, and I'm going to be in power someday. And I thought to myself, not if I have anything to do about it, you're not going to be. These children who have no concept of history, they have no idea what happened. They have no idea what communism really is. They don't get it. To them, it's just a cool Che Guevara t-shirt. That's all it is. It's just a cool, you know, red star on something. There's no concept. There's no connection of the millions, the 80 million at least, who've died because of this flawed ideology. They don't want to know about it. They don't want to know about history. They don't want to understand how these things came to be. They don't care that Mao Zedong murdered millions. They don't care that Joseph Stalin killed millions. Nikita Khrushchev killed millions. They don't care. Because those guys are promising them utopia. Whereas American conservative heroes are promising them self-responsibility. Take care of yourself. Why do I have to do it? It's your job. You do it. No, somebody should take care of me. When I hear people like Bernie Sanders say, I'm a socialist. When I hear people say, I want to be Bernie Sanders. Socialism is great, but I just go back to Lenin. The goal of socialism is communism. And believe me, communism is going to kill you. Communism is not going to tolerate your deviance. Communism is not going to tolerate your ideology, your ideas, your thoughts, your desires. And most of all, it's not going to tolerate your liberty. And no liberty, no freedom, no self-determination. Communism doesn't work because people like to own stuff. And eventually, either the communist government has to take your stuff away from you, tell you you can't have it, or you have to tell the government to take a hike. Either way, somebody is going to get hurt. It's half past the hour. 565-DAVE, 209-565-3283, the text machine. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. I'm just fascinated by Maine. I really am. Watching my favorite news station this morning, and they're going on and on and on about how wonderful this stuff is. But, oh, by the way, you might not want to go down there because it's probably going to be a mess. Stay with us. Back right after this.
Being around too much loud noise like a leaf blower or rock concert can cause permanent hearing loss. And once it's gone, you can't get it back. Hearing loss is the third most common chronic health condition in the U.S. Almost twice as many people report hearing loss as diabetes or cancer. The louder a sound is, and the longer you're exposed to it, the more likely it will damage your hearing. Repeated exposure to noise can cause stress, anxiety, depression, high blood pressure, heart disease, and many other problems. Hearing loss from loud noise at home and in the community can be prevented. Avoid noisy places. Use earplugs, protective earmuffs, or noise-canceling headphones when near loud noises. Keep the volume down when watching TV or listening to music and using earbuds or headphones. Get your hearing checked and ask your healthcare provider how to protect your hearing from noise. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vital signs.
Science Underground with your host, Anissa Ramirez.
This week, can we make a transporter? I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this is
Science Underground.
Star Trek has lots of cool technologies. Some of them have become a reality. Communicators have become cell phones, replicators have become 3D printers, and computer tablets have become, well, computer tablets. But what we could really use is a transporter. You know, that device that breaks a person down into very small parts and then puts them back together someplace very, very far away? Well, to learn if the transporter can be a reality, I talked to Lawrence Krauss, a physicist and the author of The Physics of Star Trek.
Assuming that in order to make you you, I have to reproduce you down to the atomic level, there's a fancy law of quantum mechanics called the Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle that basically says I can't know where every one of your atoms is and what it's doing at the same time, which is kind of what I need to do to reproduce you exactly down at the atomic level.
For a transporter to work, you have to be taken apart and put back together atom by atom. You see, taking you apart and putting you back together breaks the laws of physics. There's a funky law in quantum mechanics that says the more that you know about where an electron is located, the less you know about how fast it is. It also says the opposite. The more you know about how fast an electron is moving, the less you know about where it's located. You can think of location and speed as two ends of a seesaw. The more you know about one, the less you know about the other. Now, this funky law in quantum mechanics is called the Heisenberg Uncertainty Principle. What it means is that a transporter will never be able to put you back together precisely.
Now, maybe I can make it a close approximation of you, but I don't know, you probably wouldn't want to try it out.
So in essence, entering a transporter would be a one-way trip. Do not get in. Engineers are unable to make a transporter because they would be breaking the laws of physics to do so. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this was
Science Underground.
Mayday is tomorrow. Rallies and marches planned for our area. Look, they're going to celebrate workers' and immigrants' rights. And the city says they expect a majority of people to be peaceful, and these are going to be expressions of free speech. But we know there are some bad actors that potentially could crash these things. Look, this has happened in the past where protests have turned violent. Remember 2 years ago, there was a protester who threw a Molotov cocktail at police. It shattered, a flash bomb lit, and an officer's clothing actually caught on fire, and his legs were burned. We know there were issues in Olympia last year. So here's the advice from the city. If you live in an area where there could be protests, be sure to stay alert and stay aware of your surroundings. Call 911 if you see any criminal activity, and then report graffiti. If you see it happening, call the Customer Service Bureau, or you can use that Find It, Fix It app to report it as well. And then if you're a business owner, city officials have these recommendations. You should bring in all your outdoor signs, anything that's out on the sidewalk, especially maybe from 5 o'clock on tomorrow in the evening. They also say close and lock your dumpsters, lock them to each other, maybe lock them to the building. Make sure they're empty as well. Trash and recycling materials, because those are things that can be thrown, bottles or flammable material. So all of that is your responsibility. Hopefully you can do that today and make things a little safer in case things do break out.
Woohoo! Doesn't that sound like fun? International Communism Day. Lock your dumpsters because they're going to burn them. Might as well shut your shop down because nobody's going to be buying anything. Nobody can get to your business. Of course, that's what communism is about. Welcome back. It's Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You want to join me, area code 209-565. Dave is the text machine. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter. So we've had here in Seattle, say that somewhat in jest. I'm like 16 miles from downtown Seattle, and it takes 2 hours to get there, no matter which way you go. You can drive all the way around, so you can drive from here to Tacoma and then back up 5. And when I lived here 35 years ago, that was easy. It was an hour drive, and now it's a 2 hour drive. Or you can take the ferries, which are expensive, and you have to wait for them, and then they break down, and that's why I don't go to Seattle much. I went through Seattle, because we were going to Spokane, so we took the ferry over and then caught 90, and then went there, and then coming back, we bypassed Seattle and went down through Tacoma, and still hit traffic. It's just bad. Anyway, here in Seattle... They're telling people, they're telling tourists to not come to Seattle today. Can you imagine that? Tourism is like your big thing. And it, no matter where you are, tourism matters. And you got an entire city that their police department is telling people, don't come here. It's just going to be a mess. Even if nobody, even if by some miracle, there's no violence, because, you know, utopia comes with violence. Even if there is no violence, the traffic is going to be a nightmare. Why do you want anything to do with this? And they're right. Why would you want anything to do with that? It's bizarre to me. Kim Jong-un is... No, I'm sorry. I read that headline wrong. Trump, Donald Trump, if he's still president then, is willing to meet with Kim Jong-un in the DMZ. The president announced yesterday that he is considering holding his summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un at the DMZ with South Korea rather than in a third-party country. For what it's worth, I think that's a good idea. I mean, if we're going to go meet with the guy, let's do it in the place that's already set up for this, and in a place where, with everybody on a hair trigger, if something goes wrong, we can really we can start doing that. President's announcement made first in a tweet, of course. Oh, God. I swear to God, if there was one thing I could change, and I know it's part of what makes him him, and I get that, and I know it's part of what makes him appeal to his base, but if I could change one thing, it would be stop tweeting, please. Stop tweeting. Number one, Twitter gets people fired. Number two, I don't know. You have a whole, we're paying a whole press office, a whole press office to tell us what you're going to say. So we got to pay them no matter what, right? We still have to pay them. So use them, for God's sake. Stop tweeting. And let's see. He said, I threw that out as an idea today. That was at a White House news conference with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. There's just something I like about it because you're there, he said. If things work out, there's a great celebration to be had on site. Who needs a press secretary when you have Twitter? Says the guy who's studying PR. You know as well as I do what the problem with that is. Oh, well. What are you going to do? Flat earthers are in the news again. There's a flat earther. Now, again, I'm going to go back and say this, as I do not believe that there are any legitimate flat earth people. I think they're all full of BS. I think they know that the earth is round. They just want attention. Or, as someone else that I know put it the other day, the reason that they claim to believe in a flat earth is because the concept of a flat earth, if the earth is in fact flat in the face of nature and nature's God, if the earth is flat, then it necessitates a creator. It does. I mean, because there's no other way to do it. Somebody has to, as Einstein said, monkey with the numbers in order to get it flat to make it not work. This guy has announced that gravity is fake. He's disproved gravity. Let's see. Darren Nesbitt suggested that the Earth is diamond-shaped, supported by pillars. I'm not saying this is definitely what's going on, but I think it's plausible. And if you're in a helicopter and you hover, why does the Earth not come to you if it's round? God. I have issues with religion. I really do. I know I'm a man of faith. I know I'm a former seminary graduate and all that. And I certainly have my beliefs about God. I certainly do. But I got to tell you, if you're willing to believe in the face of legitimate science, we're not talking about a theory here in the sense that we don't know. We've checked, we've looked, we've spent billions, if not trillions of dollars going out into space, looking back at Earth and going, look at that. It's round. Look how small it is compared to all this stuff. Look at this. One of my favorite pictures is the one taken from Voyager, looking back and realizing how small we really are and how cosmically insignificant we are. But the whole flat Earth concept requires a creator. If the Earth is flat, if it's not round, if it doesn't adhere to the laws of physics and science, then it requires an external force to have made it. See what I'm saying? It requires something from the outside to have handled it. So the only way this works is if you get, if you have a creator. So that's, I think to some degree, that's why they push it. I personally, as I said, I don't think anybody actually believes it. I've never met the person who is so convinced that the Earth is flat that they cannot be, that they have absolutely no doubt and they can't be convinced otherwise. I've met the communists that are that way, but I've never met the flat earthers. Speaking of religion, you know, that's what they say. Never talk about religion, politics. Well, that's what we do here. We talk about politics to a degree. What we really talk about is what I think about things, but there you go. Look, as I said, I'm a religious guy. I certainly have my beliefs, and I certainly think that we have a First Amendment right to practice our religion. Where I get uncomfortable and where I get oogie about that is when people start believing that their First Amendment right to practice their religion includes putting their religion in my face and making me listen to them, forcing me to listen to that, because the courts have been very clear. You cannot force somebody to listen to you. And I have a right to ignore you. And so I get really, there's a part of me that just, I'm not sure, this would be an interesting discussion someday with some other, is it a constitutional right to preach out loud in places that are not that? Yeah, it probably is, but where's the line? How far can you go with that? Modesto, a few years ago, Modesto, California, they had a guy down by the movie theaters who was just annoying as all get out. And it wasn't just that he was preaching that Jesus loves you. It was that he was telling you that Jesus was going to send you to hell. And if you weren't paying rapt attention to him, he would walk over, put his finger and Bible in your face and start telling you you had to listen to him, which, of course, you don't. But the city's reaction to that, instead of telling him to stop and telling him that if he continued to do that, he was violating other people's rights and he would be punished appropriately. They painted a yellow square on the street and said, you have to stay in the square. The First Amendment zones of Bundyism face. How far can you go with this? Where is the line? And more importantly to me, and I guess this is the part that just really bothers me, is even if you wanted to argue the constitutionality of it, where do you get to the point where it's just, you're just being an asshat? And you're not reflecting well upon your faith. For example, Islamic people keep telling me that they are the religion of peace. So if an Islamic guy straps a bomb to his chest and blows up a kindergarten, is he reflecting well upon Islam or not? Yeah. How likely is that to convince me that, oh, Islam is the way to go? See, we can blow up little kids and everybody will be happy. This doesn't match what we're saying. See? So which is it? Certainly Christians have been through this. Certainly Jews have been through this. We've all been through it. But where's the line of common decency? I get into this on a fairly regular basis here, something we didn't have where we lived before. But For some reason here, it is a fairly regular occurrence for missionaries to come knocking on my door. Usually Friday night after sundown, which, as you can probably understand, is a time I really don't want people knocking on my door. Especially people knocking on my door to tell me about why my faith is wrong and their faith is right. That's a perfect time to not do that. Now, the first time it happens, you go, well, you know, look, let me tell you some things. Hey, this is inappropriate. Please don't do this. The second time it happens, you say, did I not make myself clear the last time? The third time it happens, you somewhat debate between not answering the door and opening the door and yelling at them. The fourth, fifth, sixth times it happens, you finally take it upon yourself and you think, this is not fair. See, they're going to make me be the bad guy. I'm not the one doing the thing that is knee cold turny, the thing that is rude, the thing that is inconsiderate, the thing that is not in keeping with what I say I believe. I'm not the one doing that. But I'm going to have to be the one that has to open my door and say, look, not only have I told you this 4, 5, 6, 7 freaking times, right there on my door is a mezuzah. Are you really that ignorant that you don't understand these things? Are you really that moronic? Don't do it. And then they say, well, we're sorry. We won't do it again. And then the next week they're back. And that particular faith has a real history of that, promising they're not going to do something, particularly to Jews, and then turning around and doing it again, which really pisses me off, but that's another story. Where's the line? Where is the line about proper religious behavior? You know you can't say fire in a crowded movie house, right? You know you can't do that. In point of fact, there was a time when you would go to the movies, and I'm not sure when this was. This the early 90s, I think. It's about the time I stopped going to the movies, but prior to that, I went to a lot of movies in the late 80s, early 90s. And it was a regular thing. Just before the lights would go out, some dude would or some gal would stand up and start asking for money, whether they were sanctioned by the theater or not. They would just start walking around saying, hey, I need money. Got old. You wouldn't do that in today's theaters, would you? What would happen to you today in a movie theater if you stood up and started yelling about something? You're going to cause panic, right? You'd think everybody would know that. You'd think people would understand that. You'd think Christians, who are always talking about how much peacefully they want to live, would certainly understand that, but apparently not. An outing to catch one of the season's most anticipated films turned into a panic-filled afternoon for moviegoers on Friday. The Harkins Mountain Grove Theaters in Redlands, people had just finished watching the latest installment of Avengers franchise. Now, I have not seen the movie. I don't intend to see the movie. Primarily because I'm 54 and I quit reading comic books about 40 years ago. So, anyway, witnesses said the movie was over. A man stood up and started yelling in what sounded like a preacher's sermon. I think that when he said, if you were to die tonight, where would your passage be? Would your passage to heaven be guaranteed? Screaming those lines, I think that's when people started panicking. In other words, the guy stands up and says, hey, are you ready to die? In a freaking theater, he says this. What kind of idiot do you have to be to do that? And I don't really care which God version of God you worship. He didn't tell you to do that. Chaos happened. People were jumping over railings, kind of falling over, twisting ankles, hitting their heads. Footage taken immediately after the incident. Man can be seen limping out of the theater. Police said a woman hit her head, had to be hospitalized. I thought she'd fainted, passed out completely. The culprit was one Michael Weber, 28-year-old preacher with Truth and Triumph Ministers. Said he's preached at the theater before with no problems. Yeah, I'm just betting that it wasn't, you know, the biggest movie in the freaking world right then. Nobody's going to get upset if you're preaching at the latest Charlize Theron's movie because nobody's going to go see it. But this one was packed on a Friday night. He added he didn't know how people in the theater couldn't see that he had his hands up. Because it was dark, you moron! Showing he did not have a weapon. It's extremely unfortunate that anyone sustained injuries because of this, he lamented. Again, I was unarmed. It doesn't matter if you were unarmed. Show me the passage in the Bible in the New Testament where Jesus said, go scare the literal hell out of people. Go scare them to death. Go scare them to me. Show me where it says that. It doesn't. In fact, there's a whole lot in there about humility, about keeping your head down, about not getting, you know, not being a jerk. But somehow or another, these people get in their heads that they're just going to become that, and they're just going to take over things, and by God, you're going to listen to them because I've got a right. I've got the right to do this. No, you don't. You do not have the right to scare the hell out of people. You don't have that right. And if your God told you to do that, your God's fake. Your God's phony. If your God told you to kill someone, your God's fake. If your God needs help from you to kill people, then your God's a pussy. It's that simple. I get so frustrated with this. I really do. Live and let live, I guess. I realize that. And I, you know, if I want to hear somebody preach to me, then I will go to a house of worship and I will be preached to. I grew up in a faith that has a tradition of preaching on the street corners. I believe me, I understand it. One of my least favorite moments of my entire life. You got to understand this now. I didn't grow up in Utah. I'm not part of the dominant religious culture in Utah. I belong to a minority faith that believes in preaching on the street corners on Sunday nights. And somehow or another, we end up in a, you know, picture and then the front page of the Ogden Standard Examiner. And there I am standing on the street corner with my trombone. And of course, everybody in school sees this. What a moment. It happens in places where they preach God as you see him. They still insist others are wrong. Yeah, I know. Thumbs still knock on the donations for windows at drive-in. Is that panhandling or are you talking about drive-in movies? The chat room, I'm asking. I don't know. I just have a real issue with panhandling to begin with. I guess it's so unseemly. More than that, it's such a scam. Panhandling is a total scam. It's just a, these people are pulling in way more money than I am and it's tax-free. That just pisses me off. And I get mad. I get mad at the people who give money to the people. I don't know who you help think you're helping, but you're not. If you're giving money to panhandlers, you're a moron. I'm almost tempted to, when I see people that give money to panhandlers on the side of the road, I'm almost tempted to get out of my car, go up and knock on the window and say, hey, can I have $5 too? I need it more than he does. I'm actually going to use it for, you know, to support my family. This guy's going to go buy drugs and alcohol with it. And then my common sense reigns in and I can realize that I'm probably going to cause an issue. But back to this religious thing, I can't even imagine what would cause somebody to think that standing up in a theater, raising your hands up and going, Jesus hates you. Jesus, are you ready to die tonight? In a theater in 2018 is a good idea. I'm pretty sure that religion has changed through the years. They don't do things today the way they did them back in, you know, 33 CE. They don't do them back to the things change. People grow up. People don't need that. People don't want that. And it's time for you to stop it. You do not have a First Amendment right to scare the hell out of people. You just don't. It's that simple. Anyway, I'll stop bitching about it. Sorry. I just see stories like that and they just piss me off really badly. They really do. And then I get stuck on that and I forget what I'm actually talking about, which is International Communism Day. Go forth and celebrate. Hooray, burn something down. Tear up a shop owner's shop. Celebrate communism by destroying something because that makes sense, right? It's such a great ideology that the only way you can get it is by killing people to make them join in. Yep. that's what it's all about. And whatever you do, stay out of your, if you're in a big city, stay out of downtown, because it's going to be a mess. I think there's a Mariners game down there tonight, too, isn't there? Yeah. Good luck with that. If they end up canceling this game because of violence, because of protests, because of misbehaving idiots, communists, I'm not going to be happy. For two reasons. One, because I love baseball. I'm looking forward to the game. But number two, I have a fantasy team, and much of my fantasy team is Mariners, and I really need them to do well tonight. So if they screw that up, they'll make up the game, but they won't do it this week, and I need the points this week. I hate fantasy baseball. I love fantasy baseball. I'm addicted to it, but I hate it. Changes how you do things. All right. That puts a wrap on the Tuesday show. We'll be back tomorrow for a Wednesday episode right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Coming up a little bit later, you got Tim Preuss at noon. I don't know what else is rolling today. I'm still trying to recover from vacation, so my brain is not 100% yet. Don't know. But I know I'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Please, take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life, you love them very much. You would miss them if they weren't there. Please don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Check us out at plausiblylive.com, as well as podcast99.org, Facebook, and Twitter. Leave me your comments, your thoughts, your ideas, even your show suggestions. I'm open to that. Have a great day in the chat room, guys, and we'll see everybody else tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific. Not GMT.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.